Well, the elites are in a tizzy over losing power across the globe. And so there is this power struggle that's going on in Europe. And Britain has left the EU. And I think people in the European Union are astounded. And there are other power plays across the globe as well. This is a period of time when people are rising up and throwing out the elites. Now, in the meantime, we have this battle between Trump and Hillary. And Hillary is obviously an elite. And she's running on a continuation of the mantra, the mantle exploits of Obama. I mean, she doesn't really have any choice. She was his Secretary of State. And so some people will look at Trump and call him an elite as well. So, but obviously not in quite the same way as being an amateur. But so is the answer to our problems amateurism? Is it getting rid of the elites? Is it breaking the game and starting over like they did in Europe? I mean, I don't see how the EU survives in Europe without Britain in there, at least symbolically, although they never joined economically completely. They never took the EU currency. But anyway, have got a ton of stuff for you here today. And it'd just be a matter of picking through it and going through the various stories and subjects. Did you know the FBI did not inform some Americans they were on the ISIS kill list? So why would they do? They wouldn't want to alarm people, you know. And what is it, like 8,000 people? We'll get into that a little bit. I just find that amazing, the way the government conducts its business. The email issue has come back up for, it's never really gone away, but the email issue has come up again for Hillary. So we'll get into that and see if there's anything local here for you. And the XLCP officer on trial for alleged cell beating. And that's two different guys. That is in the news. And doesn't appear to be a whole lot else going on locally. All right, so some of the other big news is that the Supreme Court once again overturning legislation on abortion, and Kennedy is the swing vote on this one. And so you got a situation where the Texas courts following their own, and here's the problem with the Supreme Courts going in liberalizing in the Supreme Court, is you have the Supreme Court then making decisions that go against federalism. Federalism is this idea that we need local rule, we need national rule, national power and intermediate power, but we also need local rule. The people in the communities can decide what standards they want. And if people don't like the community, the standards in the community that they're in, they can leave. They can move to another state and go to California or Massachusetts or some other ultra-liberal state. But instead, the Supreme Court continually gets involved in topics. And, basically, the Supreme Court has been used time and again to throttle, mostly, and to a great extent, conservative displays of self-government. And that has been unfortunate because it has killed you know, if you can consider this, various states had prohibitions against gay marriage and such. The Supreme Court went in and said, you not only can't do that, but we will, you will be sanctioned if you do. And so it basically forces into communities that are not interested in it. And I'm sure anybody who's gay, who's living in a community wants gay marriage. I mean, I'm not going to argue that, but there are, as everybody knows, you go to various parts of the country, you go to, Oklahoma City, there'll be one standard. If you go to San Francisco, there'll be another standard on the same topic, you know, and the Supreme Court has basically said, you're not going to have these individual decisions, and they're turning everything into rights. So it is a little bit discouraging to see that the court refuses to accept these signal differences. And basically, if you have talked to any of the people that were informed about the abortion laws in Texas, a lot of that stuff was just basically for safety. That a lot of these abortion mills don't have very high standards, and the argument can be put out there that these were an excuse to just make, you know, it impossible to have an abortion company to put an abortion clinic together. But on the alternative, you know, you've got the idea that what Texas did is only either stepping on women's rights or was meant to step on women's rights. Here is a little bit from PBS on this.
We're now joined by advocates on both sides of the court's abortion decision. Nancy Northup is president of the Center for Reproductive Rights, which helped bring the challenge against the Texas law to the courts. And favoring the Texas law, Stephen Aiden. He's senior counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom. Nancy Northup, since you had the big victory today, we'll start with you. Tell us what the effect is of this ruling in a small sense, what happens in Texas, and in a broader sense, what happens around the country.
This was a tremendous victory today. It was just a clear out win. And so what that means for Texas is that the clinics that are currently open in Texas can stay open. They were threatened to be closed by this underhanded law, and also that other clinics will be able to reopen. You know, one of the things that happened with HB2 was that it devastated abortion access in Texas, closing half of the laws under which the Supreme Court said today was unconstitutional because they weren't justified on medical grounds at all.
So, Stephen Aiden, what worked and what didn't in your argument to keep those or to try to limit the scope of these abortion clinics?
Well, we believe, of course, that it was a very big disappointment and a big loss for women's health and safety. All Texas was trying to do was regulate abortion the same way in the same manner as other similar outpatient abortion procedures. If you or I go in for a colonoscopy or laparoscopy, chances are very good that our doctor will have admitting privileges, because once in a while something goes wrong, and when something goes wrong, you want the best standard of health care available to help you. And that's all that Texas was trying to do. And the fact that the Supreme Court would strike this law down by one vote, which it did, does not augur well, unfortunately, for women's health.
Weren't you hoping more for a 4-4 let it stand ruling rather than...
That would have been the result. That's right, Gwen. If Justice Kennedy had come along, it would have been a 4-4 split, and the good Fifth Circuit decision affirming the laws would have been upheld. But alas, that didn't happen today.
Nancy Northam, what about this argument that this was something affecting women's health, and in fact that the law was designed to protect women's health?
Well, I think the Supreme Court made clear today that this was a pretext, the idea that was about women's health, because as the American Medical Association and others saw, it didn't advance women's health. And in fact, it hurt it by putting so many women out of reach of being able to get abortion services. I mean, it's a game changer, the decision from the Supreme Court today, which is why we're excited about it, because we've been fighting these kind of sham laws for years. And the Supreme Court's really made clear that you have got to have a justification if you're going to regulate abortion, and that you have to make sure that the burden does not overwhelm the justification.
Just a little comment on this. She calls it a sham law, but I mean, a lot of these clinics in Texas and other places don't have very high standards. They're doing hospital level procedures as an outpatient, number one. And number two, I mean, you know, half of the fetuses or babies, whatever you want to call them, are female. So this isn't a clear win for women's health. Number one, and number two, you know, these rights that people fight for, people ought to go back and look at the history of rights. Whoever it was that originally came up with the idea of right as we use it, which is supposedly William of Ockham, is the first person. He would have never even considered anything like this to be a right, let alone legal. We've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Jeff.
Jeff. I like how you emphasize the F's. What's going on?
Yeah, if you're talking about abortion, I can start out by talking about that a little.
Well, it would be nice if you occasionally mentioned the topic we're speaking about, but what's going on? What's on your mind?
For instance, Chelsea Clinton, now I heard on the news, had her second child. Maybe she should have had an abortion, because that way the Clintons would have stuck with the one or none child policy.
Jeff, can I ask you something? Are you for the one child or none child policy?
Yes.
Why?
Because, but you know, I,
Wait. We don't want to just kind of, politely dance past this. Why do you believe people should have either zero or one children?
You know, it's more economical. It could, the poor people would be lifted up by that.
You know, some people say that the only comfort the poor have is the fellowship of their families.
Well, go ahead if you, but the thing I get we want to defeat Hillary Clinton because, you know, like Chelsea's husband is an investment banker. Elizabeth Warren and Hillary are and Bernie Sanders too are attacking greed, and that yet Chelsea Clinton marries this investment banker. If an investment banker isn't greedy, I don't know who is.
Well, I haven't known a lot of investment bankers, so I couldn't really comment on their greediness. But all right, so your next point.
Well, Jerry Doyle, his show wasn't even live yesterday. He's letting us down in an important time like this. And you know, I got another criticism about him. He was cutting down telemarketers one time. I had a job as a telemarketer here in Las Cruces, you know, and I had an idea, like in Utah, I was looking at, they've got a helicopter school in Utah.
Uh-huh.
And we need more helicopter pilots. We need more helicopter manufacturing, you know, like for Border Patrol, police, and
okay.
A telemarketing could raise money to help the police have that, you know, here.
Interesting. Interesting idea. Okay. So, I'm sorry, Jeff, don't let me interrupt. Go ahead.
And also Jerry Doyle, he was
Jeff,
calling.
Jeff, I don't want to talk about Jerry Doyle, especially if it's a recorded show. Did you have any other points about live people?
About Henry Paulson.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, see, he's a pretty good man, but Jerry Doyle don't like him. But he only served like 2 or 3 years in Treasury Secretary. It should be an elected position.
Wait a second. Wait a second. Hank Paulson was the head of Goldman Sachs, the ultimate investment banker. So if you don't like those people, you should not like Hank Paulson.
There can be... raise the federal tax on to keep them in check, though.
All right. Okay. All right. Good ideas, Jeff. Thanks for the call. Have a good day, folks. We got to take a break here and come back and play a little bit more on the abortion stuff, just to let you know what the change in the rules are. But, you know, it's just, okay, so one guy dies on the Supreme Court and then everything goes out of whack. And then people are wondering why the fight against Hillary is so important. I mean, you know, people's lives life and death is affected by this stuff, you know? And I'm amazed at how many people who are resisting Trump and act like they're doing it, like George Will leaving the party. Are you serious? You're going to leave the party because you're too pure for Trump? In the meantime, nobody knows what Trump was going to do, but we know that what Hillary would do, which is the same thing that Obama did, is just terrible. I mean, this country has suffered so many losses since these guys got into office, on top of the fact that George Bush made a lot of mistakes, and so we need to turn the ship around. The only person that I see standing up to globalism and elitism, this idea that these elites have the stupidest ideas, and then they put them into practice, and they're so pleased with themselves, you know? It's like a little kid making a mud cake. Here, mama, look what I made. I mean, it's just terrible decisions, terrible standards. But the person who is the real danger to America is Trump. Are you kidding? That's why the two parties have lost total faith from their followers. 622 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450, and 805-6180. I think I have the text machine in my car. I'll go out and check. Be right back. And we do have this classic album again, Moanin'. We're working our way a little bit through some of the classic jazz albums of all time. This is Art Blakey. All right, so here is the summary of this new law, or the change in the law from Texas.
This is a very big win for advocates of abortion rights. The Supreme Court, by a 5-3 vote, has struck down what was arguably the toughest abortion law in the country. This was a Texas law that said abortion clinics had to have be built to architectural standards that were the same as walk-in surgical centers, and also said that doctors had to have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals. When the law was passed, the number of abortion clinics in Texas went from 42 to 19, a more than 50% reduction. And the advocates said if this law remained on the books, the total number of clinics in the state would go to 10. Now, it's a big deal for Texas, but there are a dozen other states that had laws similar to this. So they are now in big legal jeopardy, too. Some of them were on hold waiting for the Supreme Court's decision. Here is why this was a very big deal. After trying for years to figure out some way to roll back the abortion right in Roe versus Wade, the opponents of abortion came up with this new method. Instead of restricting the options for the woman, for the patient, on waiting periods or having to have counseling or limiting when it was available, they tried a new tack and directed their attention instead at the clinics themselves. The state passed this law known as HB2 with a very controversial vote. The state said it was necessary to protect women's health, but the opponents of the law said it was a pretext. It was nothing more than an attempt to make abortion more difficult to get, and a decisive win. The Supreme Court, by a 5-3 vote, struck the law down. Back to you.
Hey there, I'm Chris Hayes from MSNBC. Thanks for watching.
All right, so that was what the substance of the law was. So anyway, it's just... All right. I mean, this is a commentary really on a larger issue, which is the family structure is broken up in America, and it is just extremely common for people to be in and out of relationships. Marriage is no longer seen as the end all be all. And you've got abortion that is there as, to some people, a last ditch. You know, it's not really family planning, but it's a last ditch, birth control. So then you have Texas was trying to basically squeeze out as much abortion as they could, because there've been a lot of problems in these abortion mills for the standard of cleanliness, when there are emergencies, and sometimes these doctors doing these things don't have hospital privileges. So, if there's a problem, sometimes the women are not sent over to the hospital, or they have to take themselves over there, and, a lot of other issues. And basically, the summary of it is that you've got a procedure that continues to be unpopular. I have to go back and look at the statistics, but there are a lot of people who believe that abortion is immoral or wrong, and yet it's public policy because it's said to be a right. And it wasn't really settled the way that, not that I think that there should have been a civil war, but it wasn't settled the way other issues in the history of America were settled. The court settled it, and when the court settles it, a lot of times the society doesn't or can't really follow it because of the controversial nature. A lot of people are never going to accept gay marriage because, in the same way the court took it on as public policy, they took it on as a public issue and not a legal issue. And so, I just think that it's kind of sad to see that if anybody is innocent, it's a child in a womb, and so these kids are going to be increasingly killed in Texas, and then the people that are behind it are going to pound themselves on the back, and that's always the way it's done. Anyway, 6:31, Kelly O'Connell. We're going to come back and talk about this ISIS list. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, and the number for the text machine, 805-6180. We'll be right back. Okay, I'm going to get to this ISIS story, this ISIS kill list story in just a second. First, I've got a little bit of weather for you, but we're still kind of looking at or seeing the after effects of this Brexit vote. And there are people that are very, very upset about this vote. And I find amazing is all of this doomsday articles that people write. You know what I found is time and again, the same kind of people that have written off Donald Trump. And while I'll say it once again, in my mind, Donald Trump is not the end all be all candidate. To me, that was Reagan. But Donald Trump is standing up and he's pushing back against these this political correctness that has really come up. And you have to understand, political correctness represents the rise of philosophy that takes out traditional morality, takes out traditional common sense in society. And so the PC movement is a front to move in philosophical standards of, or if you want to think of it from another way, Marx and people like that, socialism and stuff, in which there are no standards. If you go and look in the history of socialism, Marxism, there's no legal standard. They don't, the concept of, and I've got a number of books that I ordered to try to, well, I did write an article on this, but I kept pouring through these books looking for what is, you know, what are the Ten Commandments, or what are the no-go areas for socialism, Marxism, and stuff. There are none. Everything is possible in Marxism given the right condition, including murder. So that's what we have to be careful of. And so when you see common sense wiped out in places like Europe and replaced by these idiotic bureaucracies, and then people feel their lost sense of control over their lives, and this sense of quality of life is something that Trump brought up. Quality of life goes down the toilet when these things come in, and then you're controlled by a small group of people who you don't have anything in common with, and you don't believe anything they do, but they have power over you because they've used social pressure to force you into agreement. We've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Jeff, with one more quick comment.
OMG. Go ahead, Jeff.
Russia should replace England in the European Union, and that's all I wanted to say, because they would be good against Arabia because it's Christian nation, Russia.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. I guess he couldn't hold that for one more day. Like a toddler needing a potty break. But here we go. Here's a little bit of weather for you. Severe storms, heavy rain, take aim at the plains. Weather Channel. And here we go.
That's a look at a funnel cloud in Paoli, Colorado. Three tornado touchdowns yesterday in Colorado. So it was a pretty active severe weather day for the Rockies. Today and the rest of the week, we're looking at that threat through the northern and central plains. So here's the setup for today. Rapid City down through Scotts Bluff, Sterling, all in the mix for severe weather. The main threat now through the rest of the week is going to be wind and hail, but can't rule out some isolated tornadoes. So you can see this afternoon and this evening, we are looking at basically isolated activity that's going to pop up through the plains. Now, on Wednesday, the threat remains through South Dakota, parts of Nebraska. They're going to see some severe weather as well. And on Thursday, there's that kidney bean shape that goes from Denver all the way over to Wichita. That will be the focus for severe weather with thunderstorms all around the plains.
And that does include northern New Mexico and the panhandle to Texas. So just to let you know. And we did have a earthquake down in Mexico that was almost a 6, and a 6 is where you do your cutoff for whether it's a major earthquake or not. So, and it was felt, there's all kinds of different earthquakes. It was felt 200 miles away in Mexico City. It was kind of on the coast. Check this out.
I want to report an earthquake that just happened fairly recently. This was Monday around midday or so in the time zone of where it happened, and this was down in Mexico, actually about 400 miles or so south of Mexico City. But the reason why this is so interesting, and yes, of course, for the people close to it, I'm sure it was, you know, pretty good rocking. Pinotepa de Don Luis, that's where it was at least close to. That's down by the coast. 5.7 magnitude earthquake. And the thing here is that they could actually feel this in Mexico City, all right? There were some buildings that were swaying around. Now, just to give you an idea of the Richter scale here, I mentioned this was a 5.7 quake. You get up into that range, and that's when furniture moves. You get damage in the walls. This is not usually at the catastrophic level, okay? But, again, this just happened pretty recently, so we're still kind of unfolding some of the latest developments. I mentioned the buildings did sway in Mexico City. They actually did have a few evacuations there as well. I think it was mainly precautionary in Mexico City. Witnesses felt the ground shake, and no immediate reports of damage, but I'm sure we'll find some fairly soon close to the epicenter.
All right, so I've got some weather for you coming up here, but let me check my own little weather app here and 79 degrees. Well, that was 8 hours ago. I'd have to refresh that. Let me get that off the board here. But anyway, here's a little break for your weather, and we'll be right back. And when we come back, let's get into a little bit of the Hillary thing, because it's hard to say what a big deal the Hillary thing is, because there's this sense that under no circumstances will Obama ever kill his third term by indicting her. On the other hand, there's more than one person, there's more than one thing in play, but the Justice Department has been hit with accusations that it is not playing straight up. So anyway, we'll be right back. So anyway, it is possible that Hillary could get indicted, but I don't understand under what circumstance she really would be indicted, because it would take, you know, if Obama is running everything, ultimately it would take his blessing. And I don't know. It seems like a suicide mission that the guy would be on to kill his legacy. And I just, you know, to me, the only thing that matters to Obama is, number one, radically changing the country, and number two, getting credit for being a great president, which hopefully neither one happens. But here's a little bit on the email investigation of Hillary.
Clinton's former IT aide expected to keep quiet about the work that he did on the former Secretary of State's email server. Brian Pagliano's decision not to talk during an upcoming deposition with Judicial Watch could increase the odds that Clinton herself will now be forced to testify in the case. Chief Intelligence Correspondent Catherine Herridge, live for us in Washington. She's been covering this story since it broke. Catherine.
And this is a little bit of old news here.
Brian Pagliano has something called a use immunity deal with the Justice Department. It means he can't be criminally prosecuted for what he tells FBI investigators or from leads generated by his testimony. And in that separate civil suit brought under the Freedom of Information Act by Judicial Watch, Pagliano has until close of business tomorrow to file that immunity deal with the judge.
And he did file that. So that is a little bit old, but that'll tell you some of the background issues, is that people are getting offered immunity. And all right. So here is one of the issues that's come up, and if they can't get information from one person, then they move on to the next person. Here, one of the most extraordinary facts that's come out of this investigation is the idea that, or the fact that, not only was the basically the email service or the internet service that was put together for the Clintons for Hillary Clinton to use as her State Department, as the head of the State Department, her email was put together by, from what I can tell, I don't know if you would call them amateurs, but it wasn't a big company. It was just a couple of people. And then they were told, or somebody decided they were going to disable the security apparatus on it. Can you imagine that? So here's a little bit on some of these issues.
State Department IT specialist for Hillary Clinton getting grilled by a conservative watchdog group today. Brian Pagliano testifying today before Judicial Watch. But instead of getting grilled, well, actually, he didn't give them any answers that they were looking for. Chief Intelligence Correspondent Catherine Herridge is live for us from our Washington Bureau. Catherine, so what did happen?
Well, thank you, Heather. A Judicial Watch official tells Fox News the deposition of Clinton IT specialist Brian Pagliano lasted about an hour and a half, and he invoked the Fifth more than 125 times. The official said Pagliano was working off an index card, and he read the same crafted statement each time. The Judicial Watch official said they asked all of their questions, and at the end, the official said it was a sad day for government transparency. Pagliano, as you know, struck an immunity deal with the Justice Department late last year as part of the FBI's ongoing criminal probe of Clinton's email practices.
All right, and then there's a little bit more on that's all I have right now on that. Forget getting into it a little bit more. I just don't see it going anywhere. And I've got one other story for you that's legally related that I thought was kind of interesting. Do you remember in the Baltimore Freddie Gray investigation on whether the cops murdered that guy that was in the van? You know, you couldn't possibly miss that. And so they've now investigating the prosecutor, because not only has she not been able to convict any of the people in this thing for wrongdoing, but it looks like she's not going to convict any of the people at all. And she's a young prosecutor. And so the question is basically, was she in over her head? Did she have bad motives? They knew that she was aiming for higher office. So let's cover that when we come back. You'll find it interesting, but it's another spectacular blunder by these people as a part of Black Lives Matter are trying to show through the court system that there is institutional racism across America, and it hasn't worked out very well so far. 650, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450 and 805-6180. We'll be right back. All right. This young lady demanded, she looked at the evidence and claimed the evidence was damning. And now she's gone to court where she had the full power of the state behind her, and she's totally flailing, and it's a disaster. And so instead of these cops getting investigated and convicted and discredited, it looks like this Baltimore prosecutor will be. Check it out.
.net. Daryl Parks is a former attorney for both Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown's families. Good.
The prosecutor is black, and both of the guests on the show are black here. And this is Fox News.
To have both of you with us. Daryl, let me start with you. Well, what's your reaction to what you just heard?
Well, I think we have to be very careful here, because what we do know is that prosecutors enjoy very, very wide immunity when it comes to cases like this. I think it's also very important that this particular detective was not very specific as to what she did not agree with that the prosecutor presented. I think it's also very noted here that this particular officer was asked to get off the case by the prosecutor's office, and the police department declined. Obviously, there's a big rift that exists between the police department and the prosecutor's office. Certainly, you have to question whether this particular detective should have been on this case. Notwithstanding that, there's also a difference of opinion that the medical examiner in this particular case said that the death was a homicide,
That's
and this
true.
Detective said in her notes that it was an accident. So I think you have to question the truthfulness and where this comments are coming from in this case.
I mean, the case so far, the case, the people that have been tried so far, it's been falling apart. And that's what's raising a lot of serious questions here about this case. And you think back to Mike Nifong in the Duke case, he was disbarred and jailed for misrepresenting the evidence and lying about the evidence. We're not saying that that's what's happening here. But there is the potential, if people were misled on that grand jury, for some action against Marilyn Mosby. Is there not, Kevin?
Well, the operative thing that Daryl started out by saying is we have to be very careful here. And what's interesting is that we have to be very careful when it's the other side that's being looked at. They weren't being very careful when they decided they were going to prosecute these six officers. And quite frankly, a lot of people look at this and say, it was almost like they just said, you know, let's throw the proverbial crap against the wall and see what sticks. And now we decide that he's talking about, let's be careful. They should have been more deliberate when they were looking at this case in the beginning and deciding on who really might be at fault and making a determination about who really should be prosecuted. Because as we've seen, three of them are now innocent or have been found innocent, and three others are probably going to be dismissed because their cases are less than those.
I just want to take a moment to show everybody Marilyn Mosby when she first came forward very forcefully and made her statement about what she felt had transpired. She talked about the youth of the city. Let's listen to that part.
The findings of our comprehensive, thorough, and independent investigation, coupled with the medical examiner's determination that Mr. Graves' death was a homicide, which we received today, has led us to believe that we have probable cause to file criminal charges to the youth of this city. I will seek justice on your behalf. This is a moment. This is your moment.
Yeah, Daryl, that's the part that confuses me. I don't know why it's a moment for the youth of the city. It's a case that has to be determined to be accurate and true or not. Why is it a moment for the youth of the city?
It's a moment because Marilyn Mosby has seen and been a part of Baltimore for a long time. And she has seen that the police department in Baltimore has victimized many other youth in that city. And so it's gone
That's
for
not
so
relevant.
Long.
And, you know, I mean, this is an individual case.
It's very relevant.
It's an individual
it's
case that
really
has turned
irrelevant.
Out so far to be falling apart.
It's,
I got to jump in
irrelevant.
Very quickly, Kevin, at last 20 seconds.
No, it's completely irrelevant because Mosby had been the state, had been that, in that role for many, for a long time. So had Shelby Blake, or I'm confusing who I'm talking about, but the mayor. So if it was anybody who's making a mistake here, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, it was those people that were in charge. So how is it suddenly a miscarriage of justice?
Break. We got to go. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right. So remember what we were talking about yesterday, racial justice. You got to be careful with racial justice, because what does it mean? This lady's going to stand up on behalf of the kids of Baltimore. But what about the individual defendants? What if they're all What if they're all innocent? And in the same way, Obama's racial justice, to the extent that he's tried to play that out and play the race card, has been a disaster. Why not try to make a society in which we forget about race, as opposed to always talking about it and focusing on it? The mayor of that city was completely embarrassed. She was in the pocket of Al Sharpton and just made a bunch of really crazy and ridiculous statements that showed where her mind was at. I think we need to get politicians that are not so ideologically oriented and are more into problem solving and making our lives better. All right, so here's some texts. Why, with cheap contraceptives available everywhere, do women opt for abortion as a way to terminate a pregnancy? That is something that I'll never understand. Wonder what would be the number one thing that would change that would help women to decide to bring their pregnancies to term. Something as simple as a booming economy. I feel as this country is being overwhelmed by a culture of death, drugs, and destruction. After 8 years of Obama, I think people have run out of hope and that things will never change. Hope and change. And somebody else forwards that we may take a war for abortion, and it's the new slavery. It's the slavery issue of our day. And let's face it, a lot of kids have been killed, 55 million, I think. And those are all people that would have come into the economy to work. And we wouldn't have to use this ridiculous excuse that we need workers, therefore we have to have illegals coming in constantly day and night. 6:59, Kelly O'Connell will be back after a break on the hour. All right, so there has been some rain up in the north that is helping to hold down some of these fires that sprang up. So that's good news. I have a kind of a weird story here. Got some New Mexico news for you. New Mexico fire chief charged with impersonating a cop. And I got that one for you. A guy who was arrested for stealing from his grandmother frozen dinners. Got that story for you coming up here. And a New Mexico family punishing a teen. And you might, by making him live in a tent out in the desert, and you might find that the family's name is consistent with the punishment, bogus. Or maybe you agree with it. Now, they found the cubs of the bear that was shot when the bear attacked the woman who was running in the race and up north, and they took those they found the cubs and took them in. The mother had been given a they had tranquilized her during the winter and had counted a couple of cubs. So one is 8 pounds, the other one's 12 pounds, and they're going to let them go when they get about 85 pounds. They've got them in an animal shelter right now. All right. What do you think about this, making the kid live out in the desert? I think it's kind of a novel thing. If he's a real bad kid, what are you supposed to do? Hand him over to the nanny state? And who knows how that would turn out. Anyway, here is first New Mexico fire chief impersonating cop gets in trouble. And I got a little clip on that for you. I have never heard about that before. That would be like an architect impersonating a doctor. Here, check this out.
Valencia County Fire Chief is facing charges accused of acting like police and pulling someone over. Fire Chief Stephen Gonzalez called dispatch earlier this month saying he had just stopped a driver on I-25.
We have a Lufkin's PD officer meet me on I-25 just off of the 203. Have a vehicle, silver Camry, pulled over excessive speed and reckless driving.
Gonzalez does not have the authority to pull people over. News 13 confirmed tonight that Gonzalez is charged with impersonating an officer, a misdemeanor, and false imprisonment, which is a felony. He has been summoned to appear in court. A month ago, Gonzalez was suspended after he and his top staff were caught in uniform with exotic dancers while at a conference in Indianapolis. Chief Gonzalez is on paid leave.
Holy cow, what if he was trying to make up for that? All right, here is the kid that stole from his own grandmother frozen dinners.
Grandma's freezer is accused of hurting a deputy while trying to get away. According to a criminal complaint, Jonathan Size wrote...
This guy has got a gash in his forehead that looks like a Y, and it looks about 6 inches long across the forehead and goes down about another 6 inches. It's ghastly.
Broke into his grandma's house near Carnwell and was stealing frozen TV dinners. While deputy tried to arrest him, investigators say Size stuck his thumb in that deputy's eye. That deputy says he later found a gun in Size's pocket and several glass pipes with drug residue. In court today, a judge increased his bond because of his past.
I'm going to go ahead and set the bond in the amount of $10,000 cash or surety based on the nature of the crime and the crimes of similar nature.
Size remains in jail at MDC at last check.
Well, maybe he didn't have a gun. Maybe he was in his pocket. He was just happy to see the deputy. But here we go. Here's New Mexico family punishes teen by making him live in tent.
New Mexico family is trying to teach their troubled son a lesson by making the 16-year-old stay in a tent in their yard. Neighbors are calling the sheriff's department about it, and deputies keep checking it out. So we checked it out, too. News 13's Candace Hopkins reached out to those parents to find out what they're thinking. Candace?
Dean, this tent is the 16-year-old boy's current home for daylight hours after his parents say he repeatedly stole from them. But the move has deputies knocking at their door.
That's a terrible thing.
I don't see anything that is abusive or negligent
this tent and who is living in it has people in Berlin abuzz. It's a form of punishment conjured up by parents who say they're out of options.
We're not doing anything wrong. We are simply trying to teach our child a lesson.
If he doesn't learn that now, it's going to be somebody, it's going to be the whole world's problem, not just ours, in a couple of years.
Jacob and Angela Bogus say their son keeps stealing from them. They say they've tried everything to straighten him out. So it was time for a new approach.
Or we let him run all over and then he's in your backyard taking your stuff.
They're making the 16-year-old live in this tent behind their home during the daytime. He's fed, has all the water he needs, and can use the bathroom in the house. He comes inside every night at 9 to sleep.
We are trying to do the best that we can.
But some see the punishment as excessive. Neighbors have reported the family to the Sheriff's Department and CYFD. Deputies say they've been out to the home 3 times in the past few weeks, including a visit today, and they don't see anything illegal with the punishment.
Well, it's not like he's been banished out to the Mesa 100 miles away from civilization.
It may not be illegal, but the court of public opinion is divided on the punishment.
It's an awful thing to do to a human being.
If you do something wrong, there are consequences. There's cause and there's effect.
If you're judging the parents, they say they're open to suggestions.
Anybody who wants to talk, who wants to try to talk some sense into him is more than welcome. We're not trying to hide from this.
The teen has been living in the tent for the past 2 weeks. His parents say the punishment will last a month unless he completes 5 book reports meant to teach him about being a respectable man. Back to you, Dean.
All right. They could tase him. So let's take a little break here and we'll come back and talk about ISIS. If you're on the ISIS list, it's not a good thing. 713, especially if you don't know about it. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523, 1450, and 805-6180 to text. We'll be back to talk ISIS. Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly.
Hey, what's
up?
Do
me a favor. If you talk about ISIS next,
yes.
Don't call them ISIS. Call them Daesh. You legitimize them by saying they're an Islamic state. They are not. In the Middle East, they call them Daesh. Because that means to trample underfoot.
Maybe that's what they do when they see him coming.
Well, that's what they need to do to them. Daesh seems to do to everybody else. So, minimize ISIS by calling them ISIS. ISIS is the name of an Egyptian goddess, not a bunch of thugs. Call them what they call them in the Middle East.
Sounds like a good plan.
Okay, like to hear you say it.
Did you want to?
See you later.
Okay, have a good day. Thanks for the call.
You too.
Bye. All right, you find out that there's an ISIS list, and then later you find out that there are Americans on the ISIS list, and then later, much later, you find out that you're on the list and nobody told you. Now, would you rather know if you were on an ISIS list or not? I mean, I think the question answers itself, but, and I would assume, don't you, that every person who's on the ISIS list then becomes a Second Amendment advocate, kind of on the spot. Check this out. And the FBI did not inform some of these people, some Americans, that they were on the list.
For almost 2 months, this woman has been on an ISIS hit list. The FBI knew it, but the problem is she didn't, and neither did her local police department until Circa News called them.
When did you first find out? When you contacted me several weeks later.
This is Amelia.
By the way, I was called up and informed not to use ISIS. I was informed to use Daesh. Daesh is what they call them in the Middle East, which means to be ground underfoot. And because they don't have a state, even though they took over Libya and they live in Libya, but hey, maybe we could call them the Islamic State of Libya.
Which isn't her real first name. We're using an alias to protect her and her husband, who's in the army. She's not the only American in ISIS's crosshairs to be kept in the dark. Over the last 2 years, ISIS has issued hit lists naming more than 15,000 Americans to be killed in places like New York, Texas, California, and Florida. Circa News called just 24 on one of these lists and found 22 people who had no idea they were on it. None got a call from the FBI. Amelia was one of the few we talked with who got some sort of warning, but it was vague.
I received a phone call on May 12th from the Army Security Agency.
She said it was a short call, and they read from a script indicating that there was a credible threat on her life, but didn't detail what the threat was. No mention of ISIS at all.
It was a little scary, and then he reiterated after the fact, "Don't be concerned. We are going to notify your local police department to be aware that you are under this alert, or that the FBI has notified us of this about you."
Their targets were radicalized lone wolves and terror cells. After Amelia got the call, she didn't know what to do.
I really didn't know where to contact anybody to get any more answers. They did tell me that if I needed to contact the local FBI agency in this region, I could. But honestly, you know, as a regular citizen, I'm not even sure how I would do that.
We called the Army to find out why she'd even been on a hit list. They couldn't talk about it. Then we went to the Corpus Christi police to see if they had been notified, like Amelia was told they were. They didn't know what we were talking about. We tried the FBI too. At first, we got the runaround. But a week after trying to get some answers, we did get this statement from the Corpus Christi police. We were not contacted by the Army or the FBI referencing the threat to our citizens.
The main purpose of government is to protect the citizens of this country.
Chad Jenkins used to be a counterterrorism agent for the FBI and had a job of tracking terror threats. Today, he runs his own security firm.
I mean, if we aren't notifying private citizens, that is a disservice. We need to be asking those questions as fellow Americans, why that's not being done right now, especially with the evolving threat that we have seen so recently from ISIS-inspired and ISIS themselves here in America.
FBI officials offered this statement to Circa News, saying they are working hard to alert anyone who fell through the cracks of the notification system. The FBI added that to date, no one on any ISIS kill list has been murdered by terrorists. But that's cold comfort for Amelia.
We're not out there doing the tracking to find out that these things have been on the dark web. You know, if we don't have that ability, we count on the government to do it for us. And they need to share that information with us so that we can protect ourselves.
Sarah Carter, Circa News.
In a way, I mean, not to laugh, but I think it's pretty hilarious that the FBI is too busy with whatever it's doing to let people know that ISIS is hunting them down. And I wonder what people did to get on this list anyway. I mean, there must be people that are on the list that just have no idea that they've done anything to be offensive. But there's supposed to be 8,000 names on this thing. So in the meanwhile, Loretta Lynch is informing people that love defeats terrorism. You know what I mean? Love defeats terrorism. So, did you know when they went into that club, the police went into that club, and they in Orlando that they were in there and there was a little bit of exchange. They don't really know if the cops shot at the guy or not, but they were told to stand back until the SWAT team got there. And then there was up to, say, 20 minutes that the gunman was inside of the club. So they haven't released all of the details, but in the meantime, to find out what exactly it takes to make it onto the list, Al Qaeda is urging lone wolves to target whites to avoid hate crime label. So kill people in the name of non-ISIS, according to one of the callers. Well, the president calls them ISIL. He doesn't know any foreign languages, but he always knows the right word to use. All right, here's a little bit on fighting terrorism with love.
Our most effective response to terror and to hatred is compassion, to unity, and it's love.
That is your Attorney General Loretta Lynch on how to fight terror. She has come under intense heat for her response to the Orlando terror attack, including the DOJ releasing edited 911 transcripts from the killer's calls. And today, Fox's Catherine Herridge questioned the Attorney General on that editing decision.
Whose idea was it to edit the 911 transcript?
Well, in the review that was being done in terms of making those available, the goal is, of course, the greatest transparency possible. The initial thought was we did not want to provide a further platform for the propaganda of the killer. But once it became an issue, we decided that we would go ahead and release the full transcript, which is out now. So you should have that.
If I could just, my question is, where did the idea originate? Was it yourself, the FBI director, or with the local?
I'm not going to go into the details of the.
All right, that's old news, but anyway, they're talking about who they're going to – now ISIL, ISIS, non-ISIS, non-Islamic State terror wants white people to be killed.
Himself, Michael Mukasey. Judge Mukasey goes on the record. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Greta.
Judge, you have any thoughts on how this attorney general is handling this episode, this 911 call and investigation?
Well, you know, if her – conduct and her statements were the only manifestation of the administration's position, you could sort of dismiss it as almost harmless psychobabble. But unfortunately, it's not. This is part of a kind of larger pattern of trying to bleach out or white out any part of Islam that people think promotes violence or promotes the kind of behavior that we saw in Orlando. And that this has been ongoing for a long time. When Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, this administration co-sponsored a resolution in the United Nations that urged member states to criminalize any statement that promoted, among other things, controversy or hatred of religion, whether the statement was accurate or not. And the administration takes the position that that resolution is international law. And they have assiduously gone after any attempt to use the word Islamic terror as part of our description of what is going on here.
I think what strikes me is sort of the big picture here is that it certainly looks political when you're sort of whitewashing, editing. I mean, you and I both know in the courtroom you can't just take words out. And frankly, we don't even know if this transcript is right because it's not authenticated. And there's a lot of reason to be suspicious because they've had such a funny dance unrolling it.
Well, it's not accurate because they use the word God. He obviously used the word Allah. That's different.
Right. But my point is that when you massage it or manipulate it or play with it or whatever, we've got this other investigation lingering over here, which are Secretary Clinton's emails. And when they display themselves in such a political fashion on one side, no matter what happens on that, someone's going to make a decision on that email, whether it goes to a grand jury or not. And it just invites more criticism of being poisoned and political and everything else you can think of.
Well, there's certainly no law enforcement justification for having edited the transcripts the way they were edited or having edited them at all. So you're then left with that political explanation.
Do you think she's taking marching orders from the White House, or do you think that she's doing this on her own?
Oh, gosh, I'm not, you know, I don't read minds and I don't want to be unkind to her. As I said, I think this is part of something much larger in this administration. Resolution 1618 in the UN is part of it. Another part of it is the fact that they refer to their counter jihad or counter terrorism effort as CVE, combating violent extremism. They don't even name what kind of violent extremism it is. Have you ever known anybody to strap on a suicide belt or pick up an AR-15 in the name of violent extremism? That's ridiculous.
Well, the other curious thing is that the killer himself said why he was doing it, and that's so discounted. He said in a 911 call why, and they've looked for every other reason except for what he gave.
Right. They said, well, we'll never really know what motivated him. Yes, I'm sure Muhammad Atta had a problematic relationship with his mother, but I don't think that's the reason that he led the effort on 9/11.
All right. So, and we've already heard some of this stuff, but it's interesting to hear it again. Now, there is someone named Phil Houston who has a company that investigates or teaches people how to find deceptive behavior. And Phil Houston, the CEO of Q Verity, a training and consulting company specializing in detecting deception by employing a model he developed while at the Central Intelligence Agency. And he says that that Lynch, she shows classic deceptive behavior. So if I can find a clip of that, I'll put it on. But in the meantime, I have a stunning story for you about Donald Trump. And I got a couple of other good stories. Well, I've got something on Bill Clinton from this guy, brand new book about the Clintons. So from the Secret Service that used to guard him. And 729 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE 523-1450 to call in and 805-61802 text. We'll be back. All right, so I'm getting some texts about the Benghazi report, so let's switch over to there. Here is the Dems. Democrats are saying that Clinton did nothing wrong.
Democrats on the House Select...
And this is just coming out today.
...committee on Benghazi preempted a Republican report on the 2012 terror attack, their own findings that seemed to absolve Hillary Clinton of any wrongdoing, and rips Republicans for endless hearings and reports on the subject. Four Americans, including the U.S. ambassador to Libya, died in those attacks. This as the committee's Republicans wrestle with the White House about the, what the president did that night. Chief Intelligence Correspondent Catherine Herridge has our report.
The Republican-led Benghazi Select Committee and the White House are deadlocked over whether President Obama should answer questions about the 2012 terrorist attack that killed four Americans. Ambassador Chris Stevens, Foreign Service Officer Sean Smith, and former Navy SEALs Ty Woods and Glenn Doherty. Citing the constitutional separation of powers, the White House counsel said the president would not cooperate, and reporters were told the Republicans had found nothing new.
Given all of the other priorities pending right now before Congress, common sense measures to combat gun violence, maybe they should get to work on something they can have actual impact on.
In June, the Republican Committee Chairman Trey Gowdy sent 15 questions to the White House. Among them, had Mr. Obama ever authorized secret programs to arm the Libyan rebels? And when did he learn which terrorists were responsible? The White House spokesman said Republicans are unwilling to accept that Mr. Obama was deeply engaged during the 2012 attack, pointing to this briefing posted on social media.
This is a Republican conspiracy theory in search of a conspiracy.
Given the president's recent Q&A with a baseball legend, a Republican spokesman said, it's no surprise President Obama would rather take questions from Derek Jeter than answer questions for the American people about the Benghazi terrorist attacks. The Select Committee Democrats released their own report today, concluding the Defense Department could have done nothing differently. And while State Department security was inadequate, Hillary Clinton never personally denied security requests for Benghazi. On Happening Now, a seasoned political reporter explained the Democrats' timing.
There's this concept in politics of inoculation and sort of giving someone an injection of a little bit of bad news to prepare them for worse news. I think that's what we're seeing here. They're trying to inoculate the public against what they expect will be a fairly negative report from the majority.
Tonight, the release of the Republican report is imminent. Chairman Trey Gowdy has consistently maintained that they've interviewed dozens of witnesses who were never questioned by other committees, and he's promising his report will break new ground. Meantime, a review of the Democrats' findings show that there are about as many references to Donald Trump as the two Navy SEALs who were killed that night in Benghazi.
That's pretty funny, and I do have blockbuster news about Donald Trump, but here is a little bit more on Benghazi.
And welcome, everybody, from Studio E here in the heart of Midtown Manhattan. It was kind of a rainy night, and now
right.
It's dried out.
Angel's exhausted. She had to pack up yesterday's carnival herself, because we had to run. We have other things to do.
Right. You
have
to do all the work.
Calluses everywhere.
I slept for an hour.
Right. And then we get up today and find...
This is unacceptable commentary. Let me see if I... All right, here we go.
Benghazi. And that's why we turned this into a Fox News alert.
A Benghazi bombshell, House Republicans just releasing a disturbing new report on the attack.
More than 2-year investigation could mean big trouble for Hillary Clinton, perhaps, and the Obama administration.
Chief Intelligence Correspondent Catherine Herridge is live in Washington. She has already looked at the document. She has exclusive details. Catherine, what have you found?
Well, good morning. The Republican majority report for the first time identifies a key White House meeting on September 11, 2012, about 3 hours into the terrorist attack. The meeting included senior deputies to the cabinet, as well as then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. While the meeting was supposed to be about Benghazi, at that time Ambassador Chris Stevens was missing. The report found the focus was on a video blamed by the White House for inspiring the terrorist attack, even though American personnel on the ground in Libya never reported a link. The emphasis was also not an immediate and aggressive military response.
You'll see the details in the report. It's a tale of the absence of vigor and energy that if it was my son or your husband or your child, you would say that's an inadequate response from the senior leadership in the United States government.
Unlike the 2012 raid that killed Osama bin Laden, where the president, Secretary of State Clinton, and the national security team gathered, in the White House Situation Room to watch events unfold. There was no such gathering of the main players for Benghazi, even though they were in Washington, D.C. The report interviewed more than 80 witnesses previously not called before Congress to testify, among them presidential aide Ben Rhodes, who prepped then-UN Ambassador Susan Rice for her national television appearances 5 days after the attack.
What sparked the recent violence was the airing on the internet of a very hateful, very offensive video that has offended many people around the world.
A State Department spokesman said this morning that the essential facts surrounding the 2012 attack had been known for some time, adding that the department has made a lot of progress towards making diplomatic posts safer since 2012. Guys, back to you.
What do you think, Catherine, stands out most about this report by you that caught you most by surprise? Because you've been all over this from day one. You have multiple sources.
I would say there are probably a handful of things that, based on what I've read so far. One is that there was really never reporting from the people on the ground that there was a protest or a demonstration or a mention of a video. This was really an idea that was the work of the political appointees in Washington, D.C. Days after the attack, there was analysis from the CIA that was faulty and referred to demonstrations, and that was latched onto by the administration to, based on my reporting, to really shield themselves and to defend what they had originally said. So it was not an intelligence failure. There was intelligence immediately that was available to the senior players, including Secretary of State Clinton. Most notably, I think, is this meeting on the night of the attack that we had not known about at 7:30, about 3 hours into the assault, which included deputies and then Secretary of State Clinton. Based on the information the committee was able to get about that meeting, half of the sort of takeaways from the meeting was about the video. So they were talking about what they thought may have caused this rather than really focusing on the fact that the attack was ongoing, the ambassador was missing, and there was not that kind of aggressive, muscular military response that Americans would have expected.
Well, maybe.
All right, so here's Hillary's response, her infamous response.
Difference at this point does it make?
So anyway, we'll take a little break here. 741 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, and 805-6180. We'll be right back. Blockbuster news about Trump, if it's true.